This is episode number 35 with data science course critic David Venturi. Welcome to the Super Data Science Podcast. My name is Kirill Eremenko, data science coach and lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you inspiring people and ideas to help you build your successful career in data science. Thanks for being here today, and now let's make the complex simple. Hello and welcome to the Super Data Science Podcast. Got a very interesting guest today. Today we're talking with David Venturi, and David is a fascinating person because he, at some point in his life, understood that he wants to study data science. He wants to be a data scientist. And he actually enrolled in one of the prestigious universities in Canada for a data science degree, for a data science master's. But within 2 weeks of studying there, he dropped out. And he didn't drop out because he was not satisfied with his career choice and he wanted to do something else. No, he dropped out because he realized that what he was learning wasn't sufficient enough. And guess what he did instead? Instead, he created his own master's program based on courses available online. So he looks at different data science master's programs that are offered by different universities. And then based on that, he compiled his own program using the courses that he can purchase or find for free online. And I thought that it was an ingenious idea. It saved him $30,000. And also, of course, he was free to pick the best quality of content that was available to him. So we're going to talk a lot about that. And if you are interested in learning more about data science and getting to the space and finding the best courses on data science, then this podcast is for you. David will give you some tips and tricks on how to do that. And moreover, he will show you his own guidelines. So he actually has some very interesting articles published around the best courses on data science, and he's continuing to do that research. So you can actually copy what he's doing and learn data science on your own online. Because ultimately, you know, what's the end goal of learning? It's not that piece of paper that you get from a university. It's the skills and knowledge that you get from the training. And if the training is better online because it's more diverse, you have access more to more interesting instructors, and you can do it at your own pace, then why not do it online? So I'm super excited for you to check out this podcast, especially if you're passionate about learning more and more data science tools, techniques, and methodologies, and structuring your own pathway into the field of data science. And without further ado, I bring to you David Venturi. Welcome, everybody, to the Super Data Science Podcast. Today, I've got a very interesting and exciting guest with us, David Venturi, calling in from Toronto, Canada. David, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Hi, Kirill. Thanks. I'm good.
Awesome. How's the weather in Canada?
Yeah, it's fine. It's warmed up. It's, you know, we're in February now. It should be usually around minus 10 now, but it's, you know, above zero Celsius right now. It's nice.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, yeah, so very, very nice to have you on the show. And David, so the reason for our listeners, the reason I or how I got in touch with David is because David wrote this incredible article I just was very surprised and excited to read it, where he rated the courses on data science. And it turned out that according to his rating, my data science A to Z course was the top course in his opinion. So I was very excited about that and wanted to invite David onto the show, but not just because of that, but also because David actually is creating a master's in data science for himself. So maybe let's start with that. So how did you come about getting into the space of data science?
Yeah, so it's kind of a longish story. I was working out in Western Canada. My background is I'm a chemical engineer, and I was working for a company out there, and I decided to go on vacation for my birthday. I visited my friend who works as a software engineer in San Francisco, just completely, just for fun, you know, just fun vacation.
Yep.
And right when he picked me up at the airport there, he mentioned that he interviewed for a company called Coursera, which your listeners may or may not be familiar with. Like, it's an education company that, you know, offers free online courses from like really, really good universities, like Stanford, Johns Hopkins, and such. And throughout the weekend, we were talking about how I wasn't exactly ecstatic with where my career was going as a potential chemical engineer. And by the end of the weekend, he and I were convinced enough that I should try some of these online courses. So I dove into like a programming course right when I got home. And we'll fast forward about 6 months, but I ended up applying to a computer science program at the University of Toronto, which is, you know, one of the best programs in Canada. After 2 weeks at that program, I almost felt like I was regressing a little bit. Almost like I was so in love with the online method, being able to pause videos. The selection is amazing, and so I dropped out after 2 weeks. And the huge reason for dropping out was because I could focus on something that I liked better, and that happened to be data science. So, yeah, there's a lot of reasons there, but basically it was I could, you know, I had complete control over the courses I took. It was like $30,000 cheaper, and
just $30,000 cheaper.
Yeah, it's not pocket change.
Yeah,
and I realized that this is like what I loved. You know, I'm a huge data geek. It's what I've been doing my whole life. And I finally figured out that this is what I enjoy, and all of it's right there in front of me to do.
Yeah, and was it a hard decision to make to drop out of university for, you know, that's obviously one of the prestigious universities, must have been hard to get in and to actually secure the spot. Was it a hard decision to make?
You know, surprisingly, it wasn't. Like, it was one of those gut feelings. It was just like, this doesn't feel right. I had already been like at a university before, which is a huge decision, a huge factor in the decision. You know, I had the university experience. But yeah, no, just the quality of the courses. I wasn't scared at all of like sacrificing quality at all. It actually wasn't very hard.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Gotcha. That's really cool. And now you're, as you say on your LinkedIn profile and other places, you're creating your own masters of data science through online courses. Tell us a bit more about that. How are you going about doing that?
Okay. Yeah. So basically what I did was I didn't want to just go in there and mix and match courses. I wanted to have like a data-driven approach. So what I did was I looked at what universities offered, like in their actual traditional like data science masters or even data science bachelor's programs. And I took notes on like what subjects they offered. Like, as you know, data science is like a very multidisciplinary discipline. So take the best stats courses and like the actual data science process, like wrangling, cleaning, etc., machine learning. So I had to somehow find a way to find the best courses online in those subjects. And my method was looking up these subject areas on online course review sites, which there's a few popular ones out there. One that I work for now is called Class Central, and they have thousands of reviews. So using the data from that website and just like a general guideline of what a data science program should look like I made my own iteration, like a highly customized master's program, which I've been doing for about a year now, like 30 courses in total. And I think I've done about 25 now. So nearly done, but yeah.
That's really cool. And they're mostly like, is it expensive? Is it costing you $30,000 to do this master's program?
No. Yeah. So I'm estimating it's about just over $1,000. Some of the courses I am doing, they aren't completely free because I think a huge part of learning is having, supervised grading. So some of them have to pay for grading, on Udacity, for example, which is one of the main course providers I use.
Gotcha. Okay. And that sounds like a pretty cool idea. You could even maybe put that into like on the Class Central website. You could create this master's as a shell and then get people to sign up for it and then just complete those courses, show you evidence of completion, and then you could issue a master's degree based on that.
Yeah, that's something we've dabbled. That's a good idea. It's something we've dabbled in for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. Awesome. So, and how are you feeling about it? Because like you mentioned that when you were studying at the university degree, you felt that you were regressing. Are you feeling different now? Are you feeling that you're in control, that you're actually learning the things that you want to be learning?
Yeah, definitely. There are some challenges with the self-taught method. It's hard to stay disciplined sometimes. Time management with no deadlines, right? There's no professor or, you know, classmates even pressuring you to finish your assignments this weekend or, you know, get this course done by this time. But yeah, I'm ecstatic with my choice to do the DIY approach. You know, the selection's amazing. The freedom is really great. You can, I went on a random trip to India at the end of December just because I could. You know, I didn't have exams. It's not for everybody, but I think the online method, like learning from videos where you can pause and like search on Google where you're stuck and just kind of go at your own pace, I think that benefits me as a learner the most. So that's probably the number one reason I'm happy with my choice.
Gotcha. And for a lot of our listeners, I think this whole example is going to be inspiring for a lot of our listeners, because a lot of the people who are viewing my courses or listening to this show, they kind of sometimes hesitant, will this be a credible thing on my resume? You know, like if I go complete a degree, it's something I can put in my resume and employers are going to recognize it. It's going to, you know, get me jobs and open doors for me. But if I complete an online course, people are going to look at it and they're not going to really value it or value me as much as if I had completed a proper degree. So what are your thoughts on that? Do you think it's still a credible way to get education? And are you worried about not being able to get a job after you complete this master's that you've designed for yourself?
That's a really good question, one that I get often in the comments of the articles that I write. But yeah, so with respect to it, like the actual learning process, I think that the selection of what's available, like it's literally just courses from that are offered at, you know, official universities or by experts like you. So like the actual learning process and you absorbing the information, I think it's just as effective if you do it the right way, if you're disciplined.
And I personally think it's even better than at university.
I would agree. Yeah. Yeah. But the aspect of getting a job, that's a real issue. I can't say that it's going to be as easy using these online courses, you know, going to a company that has a massive HR department. Like you're probably going to be sacrificing, you know, in the current stage that we're in right now for online courses, at least, you're probably going to be limiting some of your options. But if you do it right, if you make a portfolio, you prove yourself, you know, you get a social media presence and network, it's definitely doable. Like there are people that have done it, and I'm excited to do it soon. But yeah, I think there's challenges, but they can be overcome if you're the right candidate, which is probably standard for any applicant, really.
Yeah, totally agree. And as this resonates with what Josh Coulson said in podcast 33, that this whole, like people hire these days, you know, like of course, as you say, the large companies, you might be sacrificing or limiting your options just because of their very templated approach to hiring, and they, you know, they check these things and they might miss talent, but that's their problem, it's their fault, and it's something they have to improve. But ideally, a manager who's hiring for their own team, or a entrepreneur or CEO, when they're hiring, they actually want not just to hire this skill set, they want to hire passionate people who are excited to learn, who are excited to, who are driven to find out new things, to solve problems and so on. And that's probably the most important thing. So if you're doing a master's of your own, and in addition to that, you can start creating an online presence, which I see you have already doing. You have at least two articles that you've published and that are, you can see on your LinkedIn, and probably you're doing other things, and like people can use Twitter, LinkedIn, blogs and so on to create content and put their ideas out, their opinions, and create a following. And then through that, you start networking, right? You start networking early on, like let's say you're 1 year into your 2-year master's, and you start networking, You get some connections, and you won't even need to apply for jobs by the end of it because people already know who you are. People will be, you know, anticipating, people will be waiting for you to join their teams because they know that you're a driven and motivated person. So I think you're on the right track. I think your opportunities are out there waiting for you already.
Yeah, I'd agree with that for sure.
Mm-hmm. And so tell us a little bit about the structure of the course. So what do you think are the most important aspects from data science? So from like the way you've structured your master's degree and the courses that you've taken, what did you find are the most important tools that other universities out there include in their programs, the tools that you've chosen to learn about, maybe techniques, methodologies? What should somebody trying to copy your approach also focus on?
Okay, so I think for data science specifically, I think a huge thing is the data science process, which I get into like the article that your data science A to Z course was focused in. Like, so data science is inherently a multidisciplinary subject. You've got stats, you got math, you got, you know, just general data management things, several things. And universities, they can teach these things because these courses are, you know, they're modules, they're like separate. It can be hard to link things together almost. So I think starting off, you definitely want a good course that has the data science process at its heart. So like someone leading you through and saying, okay, this is why you do this here. This is why, you know, cleaning like this data set this way is important this way, rather than just learning, you know, the tools to clean data sets like Python or, you know, like using like a tool. You want to learn the motivations behind it. And I think that's a huge key. So rather than, you know, taking like the best stats course, which is you're just learning the pure stats, like the basics, you want to have that in a data science context. So these courses out there, they exist, you know, stats for data science and like programming, like learning Python for data science. Like, you want to have that all linked together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's very, very solid advice. And yeah, and so does it really matter what tools you specifically learn, or is the process more important?
That's a good question.
Like I'll mention, like I'll tell you why I ask this question, because when I was creating the Data Science A to Z course, like I did a survey of all of my existing students back then, and a lot of them said that I said I'm creating this course. What do you guys want to know? What do you want to know about data science? And I already had students doing my Tableau courses. So what my Tableau course and some other course maybe, so I had some people interested in data science, and a lot of them said we want to know stats and this and that and data cleaning and so on. But like an overwhelming number of students said that they would like to know R programming inside this course.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
But R, or some said Python. But what you probably notice from the course is that it doesn't have R and it doesn't have Python. And a lot of people later ask me, why did you structure a course and you did include two of the most, you know, essential tools in data science, R and Python? And my answer was simple, that look, I would love to include R or Python, but I don't want the people taking this course to get bogged down in learning this programming language and spending, you know, 5 hours or however long from the course, just focus on that, because that'll really turn them away from data science, and it won't give them, they won't be in that state of flow when they're learning about the actual concepts behind data science and, like you say, the whole process, the end-to-end process. And that's why I use something like a simpler tool, Gradle, which is a kind of a visual tool, has a graphical user interface. It's very simple to build models in Gradle. It's not really used in the industry, as in like employers don't really use it, but it really helps you get into the nitty gritty of what data science is and like what it's all about. So that's why I asked this question. Like when you were taking this course, I'm assuming you've looked through it, or maybe even taking it fully. Did you feel that you need to have R and Python right away, or is it more important for you to first understand the process of data science and then kind of build these other tools as add-ons onto your foundational knowledge?
Yeah, so when I was doing your course, I already had Python and R background.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, going into what you're saying, I think your choice was correct. Like you, using an easy tool, an easy to grasp tool, that is definitely, it's more important to communicate the process rather than the tool. So I would say that you made the right choice. And
thanks.
It's reflected in, you know, how I rated your course on the, you know, the best intro to data science courses article. Node to Python and R is not 100% necessary. It helps. It could help if you could, you know, you could offer two versions of that course using both tools, you know, and expect, or maybe even expect students to have like a background going into this course. But as a catch-all intro, I would definitely rather the easy to grasp tool.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you. And out of R and Python, since you have a background in both, what are your thoughts on where is the world going in terms of R, Python? Should people who are just starting out now listening to this podcast, should they learn R or should they learn Python?
That's a really good question. Yeah. I don't have a hot take answer on that one. I know there are people that love both, hate one. There could be some that hate both, I guess. But yeah, I don't have a good answer for you, unfortunately. Sorry.
Okay. All right. But from the university programs that you've looked at, do most of them offer R or do most of them offer Python? Or is it like an even split?
Yeah, so the vast majority, maybe not vast majority, but a lot of them, maybe I'd guess 75% choose Python. There are most like stats courses use R, which makes sense since R is, you know, a stats-dominated programming language for the most part. But yeah, people usually choose Python because it's, you know, it's easier to grasp than R for the relatively intro to courses for data science.
Yeah. Personally, I really like working with R. I like the, the R Studio and just kind of like how everything's nice and neat and the vectorized operations. But what I'm seeing as well is that Python is kind of more versatile because it has that extension, like that extended use case to it that you can actually use it to develop applications. And when it comes to machine learning and artificial intelligence, that's when Python kind of supersedes R. Okay, so that's pretty cool. So we chatted a bit about the course and a bit of your background. What I wanted to also ask you is who has influenced you apart from your friend? Oh, by the way, it was really interesting to know that you're a chemical engineer because you're the third chemical engineer on the podcast. We had Ruben Kogel in episode 1, Ben Taylor in episode 29, and now you're also a chemical engineer. So I'm kind of like, I have this tally of chemical engineer versus physicists, and we've got so far two physicists, three chemical engineers. So apart from your friend in San Francisco, who else or what else influenced you to choose data science or even to stick to a choice, you know, after you made that decision? Obviously you like, as human beings, we always think, you know, have we made the right choice? Are we doing the right thing? Will I have a successful career here? Is the world going in this direction? What has motivated you and strengthened your understanding that data science or machine learning, artificial intelligence, all these things that you're learning, that they are indeed the correct path for you?
Yeah. So other than going, you know, my friend in San Francisco, like that, I have to emphasize, like that trip almost didn't happen. And I could very well be, you know, somewhere else right now. Like it was, I almost bailed on that trip like a day before because work was too busy. So like that is 100% that was the most influential thing. It is a life changing event, truly. But other than, you know, for confirming my suspicion that data science would be right for me, Other than compiling like my Twitter feed and like surrounding myself as much as possible with, you know, influential and insightful data science and machine learning people, I would say, I can't really say it was one specific person. It was just that I knew myself and I knew that data was basically what I was doing in all of my other jobs. I just wasn't titled data analyst or data scientist. Is like I was always digging deep into data, you know, always just like working with data, and in my spare time, like studying like sports analytics, like that's what I do for fun. So like it was mostly knowing myself and seeing other people other important and influential people doing similar things to me, and knowing that it has a huge impact on, it's going to have a huge impact on, you know, the world going forward. And that is pretty much it.
Okay. Okay. That's very interesting. And how do you go about surrounding yourself with influential people in the space of data science? I think a lot of people listening to this podcast could benefit from that. And I think everybody should surround themselves with influential people and learn from them and, you know, bounce ideas and like network. How do you go about doing this?
Yeah. So the one major thing is for me is I can't say I know them personally, but I really enjoy and find podcasts to be a beneficial resource. So like your podcast, for example, there are several other like data science related podcasts that I do enjoy and, you know, listen every morning over breakfast just to, you know, always, you always want to learn, you always want to progress. And like things like linear digressions is one of the first ones I listen to.
Yeah. Like for example, like I totally don't mind if you share which podcasts do you listen to on data science, maybe, you know, maybe people pick up some cool ideas from you.
Linear digressions is the main one I started with. I also, A16Z, it's a venture capital firm in the States. They have a really good podcast. It's not data science specific, but they do focus a lot on AI and machine learning. That's really interesting. There's one called This Week in Machine Learning, which is, it's more technical, but I find that I learn a lot in that one. There's not necessarily one major one, but.
Do you grab bits and pieces here and there?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, cool. Thanks for sharing that. And yeah, so you listen to podcasts and any other ways you get opinions from influential people?
Other than, you know, filling my Twitter feed with people and interacting with them, like I'll reach out to, you know, someone that has an interesting article on Twitter, just send them a DM and, you know, chat here and there, or LinkedIn messages, like this typical like meetups. So have you heard of this meetup a thing in Australia?
Yeah. I've done a few meetups, but not in data science. I've done meetups in like people who are learning French, or I think that's the only one I've done.
Yeah. So those, I don't do too many of those either, but those, there's, you know, there's so many options now.
Interesting that you say that, because we really want to, at Super Data Science, we really want to connect people. And yeah, we're working on a project that's going to facilitate interaction between people who are, you know, studying or doing data science and their peers in their city. And that's going to be very exciting. And yeah, I just wanted to like, what do you think? Is it beneficial for data scientists to meet up and, you know, just have like in real life, as they say, IRL, to catch up and have chats?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's like if you can work on a project or like, you know, a Kaggle competition or just solving like a random programming project related to data.
Yeah,
I think it's fun. You know, you make new friends. I think it's important. I don't know how. If it's absolutely necessary, but I think it's positive for sure.
Yep. Gotcha. Okay, cool. All right. So, and since you started as a into this data science master's of your own, what has been the biggest challenge for you?
Ooh, good question. I would probably say staying positive about your progress. It's like doing a self-directed program. It comes with its challenges because there's no defined path. There's always, you can always do more. Like for example, today I studied like 6-7 hours so far, and it's when is it appropriate to stop? Like I do want to, you know, I would like to start a career soon. Like how much is healthy with no deadlines, if that makes sense. Like in university you have deadlines, but here it's just kind of self-directed, and it's easy to put pressure on yourself to do more than you can. So you have to make, keep your, you know, your work-life balance at a good level.
And yeah, gotcha.
I find myself struggling with that.
Mm. So 6-7 hours, that's quite a lot. Are you retaining all of that information? How do you know when you've studied enough, for even just for the day?
Yeah, so for the day, it's usually when it's just time to go to bed. But when I'm as for retaining information, like it's been proven in studies you need breaks, right? You have to take breaks. So it's never like, I find that as long as you take breaks, you can study for, you know, you can do 13 hours straight as long as you're taking breaks in there. So it's less so being worried about retaining information rather than, you know, planning time to go to the gym or planning time, you know, for friends and family. That makes sense.
Yeah, totally. And how do you like choose the courses? Like, do you study one course at a time, or are you studying in like two or three courses in parallel?
That's a really good question a good point. I choose to do it singular. I think that when I was in university, I found that challenging. Did you find that challenging to balance multiple, you know, five courses at once? You have to compartmentalize your mind a little bit.
That's a good question. Probably when my bachelor's degree, like in my master's degree, definitely not, because it was just master's of accounting finance. It was pretty straight, like pretty simple stuff. I didn't spend that much time. In my bachelor's degree, I found that it was actually good for me to have multiple at the same time, because they were so different. Like one, let's say, was on physics, another one was chemistry, another one was mathematics, and then another type of mathematics, another type of physics. And like, if I had been studying just the one, like sequentially, to fit four subjects, for instance, into a semester, I would really have to study every single day this one subject, and I'd get sick of it. I wouldn't have the variety. I liked the variety of different topics and to be able to switch my brain over. So I didn't find it strenuous during my bachelor's degree to have four at the same time. But you're saying for you it's better sequential, right?
Yeah, I guess it's like more of a personal preference thing here. Yeah, I prefer to do one. I almost have like a completion complex in a way. I like focusing on one task.
Okay, that's interesting. And then how do you make sure that, for instance, once you've completed a course, how do you make sure that you don't instantly forget everything? Because that's what normally happens at university. You study, or maybe, you know, maybe that's what happened to me. You study for a semester, you prepare for the exams, you know everything, you smash out the exam, 2 days later, you don't remember a thing. Or like, you don't remember half the things because you were so stressed out about it. You put all your maximum energy into it. And then moreover, the next semester approaches and you move on to new subjects and that knowledge slowly fades away. And you can't really afford that in data science, and especially in preparing for a career. You need to keep your knowledge fresh and even more so on the cutting edge of that subject. So how do you make sure that, you know, if you've studied R programming, now you've moved on to visualization, that you maintain that knowledge about R or whatever you learned before?
One thing is just taking detailed notes. That's like an obvious one. But when you're doing more programming stuff, like, you know, keeping your code on GitHub, for example, still you have an easy reference, an easy place to go back to see what you did. So it's never, you can easily just watch, you know, several videos of a course and just, like you said, just forget it. So just keeping documentation is important. And then one thing that's less so documentation oriented is more like how you're studying. So even though I do try to finish my courses as fast as possible, I'm never just trying to get them done for the sake of being done. Like, there was, I think, a study I read a couple weeks ago, I think released from one of the big online learning platforms, like maybe EDX or something, maybe Udacity. They said students that learn, like they take more attempts at learning, like for example, like a certain quiz, rather than just like getting the quiz right, you actually experiment in the quiz, like see what you can break, like what is right, what's wrong. You take your time learning, or, you know, at certain checkpoints rather than just rushing to them. So I think that the way you approach learning will help you retain that better.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I remember finding myself, and I still do that when, like, I'm, I don't know, doing, like, even solving a problem or mathematics problem or doing something in coding, and I know what the correct approach is, and then I have an idea, actually, it would be interesting to see what happens if I do this, even though I know it's going to waste my time, it's not the result I want, and it's probably not going to be part of the end product. I still do it just to try it out, and then you get cool ideas from there, and it helps you learn better when you actually let your curiosity take over. I think you're right. It helps retain the knowledge as well. So the next thing I wanted to ask you is, like, can you walk us through your day? So how do you, like, because you're the complete master of whatever you do. You don't have to go to a 9-to-5 job. You don't have to wake up at a certain time. Like, what sequence does your day go through? What time do you wake up? What do you do first? Do you go studying? Do you go for a walk? Or, like, how do you pass your days in a way that it doesn't become mundane, routine, and you don't get bored?
Yeah, okay. So my ideal day, I usually wake up around 9. And then over breakfast, I'll have one of those podcasts playing in the background there. So I sort of ease into my day by someone talking to me about data science or whatever I'm interested in that day. And then I usually like to dedicate 40 to 45 minute chunks of pure studying, and then 10-15 minute breaks for about 3-4 hours in the morning. And then go for lunch. And then depending on the day, I'll mix in going to the gym, or that's actually mostly it. I don't, I live a pretty boring life. Study, gym, and yeah. So yeah. And then, I think that one thing that's helped me through my whole life maintain, sanity is, sports. So I do like doing an organized sport. I play water polo, which is fun. It's like a 100-person team or something. So yeah, I get your social interaction there or somewhere. And then usually I'll come back and study before bed or work on projects before bed.
That's really cool. And yeah, I agree. Social interaction is very important a lot of the time, especially when you're doing something that you're completely in control of. It's very easy to lose track of that. And that's not good to be all by yourself all the time.
No, definitely not.
Okay. And what's a recent success that you've had? That's something that you can share with us, something that, in your studies that you're proud of, something that you've accomplished that's a major accomplishment.
Yeah. So one that you're familiar with, and I definitely say it's the thing I'm most proud of, is for Class Central. I've worked for them part-time, and it's the Data Science Career Guide. Which is a part of a larger idea for Class Central, which is career guides in general. So basically you're picking the best courses for whatever. It could be data science, it could be software engineering, it could be history. So I'm kind of in charge of that whole product there. And so far we've released 3 articles for the Data Science Career Guide, one outlining the best programming courses for data science, one outlining the best stats courses for data science, and then the most recent one, which your data science A to Z course is included as the number one choice, is the best intro to data science courses, where you outline the data science process. And those courses, thanks to a little help from our friends at Free Code Camp, which is, we have a big publication on Medium, they picked up those, and we're at about 200,000 views and approaching 5,000 recommends. And it's really nice to see people, like, they really appreciate the content and the work you put out there. Like, they're learning stuff, they are taking suggestions. It can be overwhelming, there's so many options out there, but it's really nice to see that people are actually taking these courses and learning and bettering themselves and finding their passion, hopefully. So that's one thing I'm most proud of.
That's awesome. And yeah, I completely can agree with that. These articles are quite amazing. So everybody listening to these, we'll put the links in the show notes, or for some reason, there's only 2 out of 3 linked on your LinkedIn. The programming one, I think, isn't there. But yeah, so either through David's LinkedIn profile or through the show notes for this episode, definitely check them out. And like, reading them, you can learn quite a few things. So, and David, what would your recommendation be on how to best how to best use these articles. What should people do with these articles to get the maximum benefit and actually, you know, start learning data science as you recommend?
Yeah, so there in each article, there's probably 25 to 30 courses in each one. And it's hard to pick the best one. Like some of them, they all are relatively close in terms of, or several are relatively close in terms of actual like star ratings. Like several are above 4 out of 5 stars. And some of the reviews are very subjective. So pick what kind of style you like the best. If you want to learn a certain tool, like you were saying before, like if you really want to learn R, maybe pick a course that teaches R rather than one that teaches, you know, something else. So just tailor it to yourself. I'm just recommending the ones that I think are best for the most people, but there are definitely lots of great choices in those articles.
Yep. And guys, check them out. It's definitely some very powerful articles there and lots of discussions. And yeah, seriously, 200,000 views. That's a lot of views. That's awesome. And just to finish off, to wrap up, I got a couple of interesting questions. What is your one most favorite thing about data science? Something that, you know, you're super excited about?
Yeah, so my favorite part is the predictive aspect. I don't know why, but that, or finding new insights and predicting things that you can't just interpret by yourself, or just get an idea of without looking deeper into the data is something that gets me going. So mm-hmm. I would say predictive aspect.
That's awesome. Yeah, totally agree with that. And from what you've seen in your journey into data science, where do you think this whole field is going? Like, what are the most important things people should focus on to prepare themselves for the future of data science coming in 2, 3, 5 years from now?
Yeah, so one thing that I'm currently working on and that I didn't realize was really important going in is the software engineering aspect, just being able to make your code reproducible and having the best practices for testing your code and debugging, all of those software engineering skills that I think a lot of new data scientists may not have going in, if you didn't study computer science, for example. So that may not be like what the future is, but I think that's a really important part that can be overlooked.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. That's very valuable. And I think as well that with the advancement of things like artificial intelligence, machine learning, skills, data science skills combined with software engineering skills are going to be more and more valuable because people will start wanting still you'll be able to perform analytics, that'll still be there. But this space of creating something that involves data science and machine learning, but is an end product, that is something that, you know, you've coded from start to finish, that it can be just launched and used by on its own and work as a separate standalone program, that I think that will become more and more valuable. So that's a very good point there that you've mentioned. So thank you very much for coming on the show. You've shared some very interesting thoughts, and I think a lot of our listeners have something to think about, to ponder on, and something that will inspire them to learn more about data science, take more control of their education, not be afraid to do these online courses as opposed to just courses at universities. And how can our listeners contact you, find you, follow you, in case they want to find out more about your career, read some of more of your fascinating articles, and just get in touch with you and maybe ask you some questions?
Yeah, thanks. So my website is davidventuri.com. All my social links are on there. I think I use Twitter, and my email's there as well. Those are the two main ones. And then, yeah, I'll have those articles are hosted on my Medium blog, which is also linked on that website as well.
Okay, we'll include all of those links. And you happy for people to connect with you on LinkedIn as well?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, awesome. So guys, reach out to David, get in touch and network with him. And one final question for you today, David. What is your one favorite book that you can recommend to our listeners that can help them become better data scientists?
Yeah, so my one recommendation is for an intro to machine learning book. It's called An Intro to Statistical Learning with Applications in R. That last part isn't necessarily that important. Being R is just the tool they choose to use. I find it to be a really easy intro to machine learning. It's well reviewed on Amazon and probably the best intro to machine learning book I could be from my research at least. So I've enjoyed that, and I would say if you're looking to get into machine learning and you're maybe daunted by the technicality of it, I'd say that's a good start.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. Intro to Statistical Learning with Applications in R. Guys, check that out. Check out that book. And once again, David, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a great pleasure. And thank you for sharing all this knowledge with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was great to chat with you.
So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed this podcast. And hopefully you picked up quite a lot of interesting things. As you can tell, David has looked at myriads and myriads of these online courses. He's studied them. He's examined them. He's critiqued them. He's selected from them. And therefore, all of the insights that he shared and the guidelines, the insights that he shares inside his guidelines are extremely valuable because they'll save you the time of looking for the best courses available. So definitely check out their website, class-central.com, where you can find the best online courses from top universities and top instructors. Also, make sure to follow David on Twitter, connect with him on LinkedIn, check out his blog. We're going to link all of these in the show notes at www.superdatascience.com/35. And there, in addition to that, you will find all the resources, all the books and courses mentioned, as well as the show notes transcript. And one final request at the end today. Do you know somebody who's learning data science? Do you know somebody who wants to break into this space? If you do, then send them this episode. Send them this episode and help them understand how to do it better and help them learn from David's experiences, mistakes, and wins, and help them build their own pathways into data science and create a career for themselves. Help out your friends. Send them this episode. They can get a lot of valuable information from the things that we discussed today. And on that note, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you, and I can't wait to see you next time. Until then, happy analyzing.